Welcome to the Tech Vittori podcast, where we will explore the hottest topics in connectivity and digitalization with some of the industry's leading minds. So Dean, let's kick off with the question we finished with the previous panel. And Stephanie was asking, like, what are the failures of 5G in order to push to 6G? And Augustine already covered a little bit of that. And there was also one quote coming from Zhao. Zhao says, quoting previous panelists, 6G is a marketing label. So maybe we can kick off from these views and on.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And actually, that's quite a good lead-in. As well as running my own advisory company, Disruptive Analysis, I'm also one of the co-conveners of a new initiative called 6G Reset. And actually, what this really is about is, and this whole panel is looking about whether we change the industry structure of the wireless and mobile industry, whether that's going to happen anyway, whether we perhaps need to reclaim the G's and who owns and defines what they are and what they're supposed to do. And I think what we're going to cover on this panel is really sort of look for some elephants in the room and think about what are our assumptions about the way that we create wireless standards, about wireless business models, about wireless policy. And how does that translate to what 6G becomes? And do we have to sort of think the industry is a different shape? We've heard this morning about use of 5G in defense. We are very aware of other investors in not just mobile networks, but in fiber networks across Europe, whether that's private equity, whether it's utility companies, hyperscalers and others. So we might broaden our definition of 6G. And hopefully that's something we can touch on in this panel of sort of what do we do about the industry structure. And as part of that, I think we'll also touch on sort of what can we do better than we did 10 years ago with 5G. But I'd like to introduce, actually I'm going to be lazy. I'm going to be lazy and let my panel introduce themselves. And so I'm going to start at the far end with Maria Guter from the European Space Agency. Maria.
So good morning. Thank you very much for hosting me here. So yes, I come from the European Space Agency and specifically the Connectivity and Secure Communications, so Telecommunications Directorate, where I work for the Non-Terrestrial Network Office. We started more than 10 years ago and established what we call Strategic Program Line for 5G, 6G, in order to support our industry into the integration with the mobile telecommunications networks. And as you know, satellite communications is old enough, I mean, early 60s, right? Until now, they served telephony, they served video services with DVB standardized solutions, but in 2022, with the efforts of our European member states actually leading this in 3GPP, satellites became part of what is called non-terrestrial networks. So everything that is not on the Earth becomes non-terrestrial networks at different layers, including UAVs and high-altitude platforms. So now satellites are part of what is called 5G Advanced. And actually, the benefit of all this effort and what our industry is transforming into is the benefit of networks interoperability, so use of common user equipment and being part of a totally unified, integrated telecommunications network. And this is also the objective towards 6G.
Thank you, thank you. And certainly, I'm sure we'll talk about one of the goals of 6G, however we define it, and also perhaps one of the problems of 5G is around universal connectivity, right? And do we have it everywhere? And we'll park that for a second, and we'll come back to that theme. Next, Louise Lancaster from DSIT.
Good morning. Yes, I'm Louise Lancaster. I'm head of wireless infrastructure strategy in the UK's Department for Science, Innovation and Technology.
Right, thank you. And your involvement so far with 6G has, you know, could you maybe give a...
We published a wireless infrastructure strategy in 2023, looking at how we can realise the benefits of 5G, but that also included a 6G strategy, which set out our vision for 6G, which preceded the ITU's IMT 2030 document, and set out the sort of the pillars of achieving that strategy.
Great, thank you. Actually, I'm going to ask the audience a quick question, a show of hands. Who here has seen the ITU's 6G or IMT 2030 wheel diagram? Do you know what I'm talking about? It's about half the people. Okay, so it's probably going to be worth at least someone sort of giving a bit of background to that, but we'll come back to that. Essentially, it's setting what the ITU, International Telecoms Union, wants 6G to do or offer, but we'll come back to it. Next up, Robert.
Okay, hello. I'm Robert Maurick. I'm the chair of the Irish regulator, Comreg, and I'm also very active in BEREC, the group of European regulators, and next year I'll be their chair.
Excellent. And yeah, you were on the main panel yesterday morning as well, your keynote with some interesting commentary. But
exactly.
So in terms of 6G, what's been your input so far? Where does it land in your current roles?
I think as regulators, we are more observers than actors in the process. It's industry that comes up with the next version of mobile technology, but we're very keen observers, and we're of course keen to see that it contributes to the welfare of our countries. Finally, and that's perhaps also another reason that we don't repeat some of the mistakes that we've seen made in the transition from one technology to the other. I have some remarks about that.
Excellent. Right. Yeah, there's definitely this word mistake has been floating around the stage for 6G. And it's interesting because there's a certain amount of sort of confession that I've noticed at conferences recently on that, about not everything going to plan. One thing we might come back to later is the slightly different role of policy and regulation, because I know in people who are not in the sort of government domain often conflate the two, but we'll come back to that again later. Last panelist is Uwe. So Uwe, if you'd like to introduce yourself.
So yeah, hello, my name is Uwe Beder from Rode & Schwarz. We are a test and measurement company, and personally I've been active in many years of 3GPP standardization, now still active in ITU, where I have been working in the group that was defining the framework for IMT 2030. From our company, we are actually mostly at the forefront when it comes to technology, because we see us as an enabler with our equipment. So we usually look into the very early tendons, what comes up in terms of either frequency but also technology, when we look into AI usage even on the physical layers, are very integrated into the communication system itself. So that is why we look at this forefront of the things that we connect with 6G.
Excellent. Right. So I want to come back to the question which we got introduced with, which is the sort of, are 5G and 6G just sort of brands? Yeah, and actually the real technology definition, does it come from ITU, the International Telecoms Union, who set up what they call IMT 2020, now 2030 for 6G? Yeah, and the 6G is this sort of nice fluffy marketing term. Do we go with that? Do we take everything that ITU says in its diagram of what the next generation of wireless should do? Do we buy into all of the aspects of that, or do we pick and choose? Yeah, is 6G a thing? Is IMT 2030 a thing? Who wants to take a view on that? Louise.
I think perhaps the branding is unfortunate, because what we tend to forget is the standards. So 5G isn't one standard. It's a series of standards releases over a period of, you know, a decade. And so when, you know, people here have suggested that 5G is a failure, I mean, we're still more or less halfway through the decade of 5G. So it may well be that it's not a failure, it's just that its time hasn't yet come. We're only just getting to the 5G advanced stage, and those products are only just coming to market. So it is still very early days. And the trouble is the hype curve gets ahead of the development. And we saw that in 5G. And sadly, I mean, you know, we're already seeing it in 6G, even though it's not even on, barely even on the drawing board. So I think to that extent, the branding can be a bit unhelpful.
Okay.
Maybe I can jump on this. Yes, generations, usually we try to gather things that we can put a label on. So that is usually what we have done with 3G, 4G, and 5G, and so on. However, in the standardization and in the development, it's actually more a continuous process. So when it came to 3G, even 3G in the beginning was not fulfilling even what ITU was doing, and ITU was always good on these diagrams. We had the Venn diagram and 3G, we had the triangle and so on. But that is where we basically, or 3GPP invented the HSDPA, HSUPE series that actually took the promise into the technology that 3G was defined. For 4G, actually, it was also a good coincidence that we came up with a total new way how end customer devices were operated from the normal phone. So I consider 4G as mainly connected with the smartphones. So usually we also had then so to say, a complete new way how to use the higher data rate that we got with LTE 4G. If you want to put a label, not technology-wise, for 5G, I think with 5G, at least the standardization and the ecosystem was trying to invite more verticals into this market that was already successful. So all in all, the mobile communication is a very successful market. We should not forget about that. And so now with the verticals, that was a whole new era. And probably it's even still in an ongoing phase where we can see that this market is growing. It is growing, but maybe the timeline was a little bit different to what has been expected. So we were thinking we will switch on an ecosystem and jumping on the mobile ecosystem, but have it for all verticals. And I believe that has not fully worked out. Because if you look at now from a little bit of a distance, then you can see, yes, these markets were smaller and actually had higher expectations in the technology.
Thank you. Maria, we're talking about looking at stuff from a distance. Mm. Well, looking at 5G from orbit, what does it look like to you? You know, was it overpromised? Yeah, you've come in at sort of on the non-terrestrial in sort of release 17 of 5G. Have you sort of looked around you and seen the rest of the landscape is what you expected, or is it fragmented? Or
okay, so to start with. In the satellite sector, there are other convergences. For sure, the use of cloud computing is computing, so the softwarization of the whole space segment and ground segment, which revolutionize the whole processes. So you can imagine that a lot of companies start, they have been early adopters and others that they didn't adopt so quickly, but at this stage, we can say that everybody tries and have already draft roadmaps how they evolve their products into the, including also 3GPP technology. Now, the satellite, one thing is that we entered into 5G advanced, and as we see also all these enhancements of the capabilities of the features that are needed on the NTN system is that it will be a continuum between 5G advanced and 6G in more evolutionary way rather than revolutionary way. And there are features that will be included in the releases, but also other features that are needed, and they may not be in the 3GPP, but from other standards, right? Because we are open also to industrial fora or ETSI or IETF that are needed as standards to make it that happen. Now, the satellite market is, apart the video services for direct to home, which are consumer services, all the others are more B2B, like services for verticals. So we are confronted from day zero, we started with NTN design, etc., to discuss with verticals. And there, you cannot impose in an industry sector that works with a certain technology and it is operational, so offers services and products, impose from day one to day after to adopt another technology or other processes. So there you're confronted with a smooth transition. And, it is obvious why several also satellite-affine verticals, name it media or maritime, transportation in general, they are very interested into adopting solutions that are unified services, but also less expensive. So, but there are also different satellite advance enhancements that come through the mega constellations or small satellites with lower cost and lowering the cost of launching. So there are also other technologies, auxiliary technologies that push into this innovation in NTN. So briefly, so we have to support the verticals also that we have to serve, but we have the attitude to develop the projects with them. It's just we don't design its network is designed in a way to serve them. So yeah.
Excellent.
We have this.
I get it, and we'll come back to the verticals and their role in investment in a second. Robert, you had a comment you wanted to make there.
Oh well, I wanted to go back to the remark that were made earlier about 5G being a marketing term, and how that plays. Development of mobile systems is a continuum. There are continuous releases and upgrades and things. But at one stage, that label is put on it, and that is a marketing element in a sense. And what we have seen happening a few times now, that label gets launched and put onto something quite early on.
Yeah.
But people have heard about all those fantastic things that over the lifetime of that technology is going to be launched. So they're expecting that from day one.
Day one, yeah.
Okay. And then it is a huge disappointment for consumers. But at the same time, the other way around, as policymakers, we get bombarded from the word go about the world is going under if you don't invest in 5G. This is the enabling technology for trillions of economic value, and you get that whole hype circle also the other way around.
It's self-serving. But one of the things that I'll on that topic of economic increases, ecosystem profitability, we heard yesterday about investment. Realistically, we want to have investment from as many sources as we can. Should we be designing 6G to be MNO primary, mobile operator primary? There's a question from the floor in the previous session of how can MNOs make money? But should we be broadening the 6G universe to include satellite companies, utility companies who are building networks, tower companies, private equity, could be cloud and hyperscalers, governments, we've heard about defense and military, but also in some countries, municipal networks as well. So should we be sort of designing 6G for all of those, essentially democratizing it, Or should we be saying, well, actually, you know, the main chunk of money is going to come from MNOs, so we should start with GSM membership and work and add others on later?
Well, I don't have a strong opinion about that. I think the technology should go wherever their demand is and wherever that technology takes it in many ways, where there are clear opportunities, and MNOs are one opportunity. But what we've seen over the last few years is that MNOs are having to invest in networks but are not really getting much bang for their buck. And if you listen to the mobile industry at the moment, they are saying, well, if 6G is going to be like 5G, then I'm giving it a pass. Now, we're still 5-6 years away at least, so I would take that with a grain of salt. But at the same time, what I find far more egregious is forcing the industry to invest through those marketing tactics when it isn't necessarily the right time to do so. And if there are other users of that technology, great, let that thousand flowers bloom. But I wouldn't want to force an industry to invest in something too early or when there isn't the demand yet.
Unlike the last panel, you're the only person who's actually got something to sell on the panel, so presumably you'd prefer a bigger audience than a smaller one.
What you said, if we should broaden up this for 6G, I think that is what I said has already happened for 5G, right? Mm. So we invited in 5G a lot of verticals, and a lot of their requirements have been incorporated in the standard. So the question, and we heard earlier, I think it was on a panel, that probably what you see in the shelf is 20% what's on the paper in the standard for 5G. And of course we can put that all in, but I think the market will decide what goes into the product. And why should I, for example, implement a 1 millisecond latency technology in mobile phones that are mainly used for mobile broadband, where probably I don't get this and need this in the network, because this millisecond latency was designed mainly for industrial applications. So we need to be honest, what is a mainstream and what goes into the broad ecosystem that we all see when we talk about the mobile industry and these G standards. But, I mean, when you look URL LLC, so this low latency and high reliability, it's in the standard. But at the moment, the market has not decided to bring up products for it.
So does that suggest that the way that that's a staggering number, that 20% of what's been standardized has actually been implemented. That's amazingly low. It's essentially suggests that 80% of the work at 3GPP is on the shelf. Do we need to structure the development of this, whether it's through 3GPP or other bodies, to mean that we've got a core, which actually gets done, but we make it easy and relatively inexpensive to do the sort of extras if companies want to do that? Is there a way of organizing the, whether it's the standards or the industry, to make that modularity?
I think to get the benefits of innovation, you normally need a bit of disruption and competition in the market. And to your point about the verticals, what we haven't really seen is the sales channel for those verticals. And the existing players that you're talking about aren't or weren't geared up to serve that market. And so there's a lag between... So it's not that the work of the 3GPP was pointless, and yes, it's sitting on the shelf. The market... And the sales channels of the market and the product development and the marketeers need to catch up and need to figure out. And that might be new players need to come in. And you also might need to address some of the points of friction, for example, around access to spectrum, and just make the whole thing a bit easier.
I'm wondering if the sort of concept of modularity and APIs and sort of deconstructing it, I mean, you can actually do this bit on its own without that bit and this bit coming with it. Because whenever I talk to people about 5G, they're very, very insistent that it's not 5G radio, it's 5G system. You know, it's this whole machinery. And it seems to be very difficult to pick out bits and pieces of that.
So we are seeing some new players in the market and some areas of the market where there is early adoption. Interestingly, broadcasting being one of them, you know, in that private 5G space. So again, it's early days, and I think it will develop and flourish, but it will need it will flow from those new innovators.
Great, thanks. Thank you. Maria, yeah, I'll come to you on that, because it seems to me that the satellite industry is actually almost viewing the 5G standards almost as like commercial off the shelf. And you go, oh, we'll have that. That looks easy. Oh, thanks for inventing this. Yeah, we'll borrow your core. What's the satellite industry's attitude to the, is it the whole thing, or is it you're picking and choosing?
No, okay, so the attitude, and at least what we have accepted as a good attitude towards the telecommunication community, is to start with interfaces that are already defined it, and try to understand how these have to be adopted or have to be enhanced, if anything, but not really redesign everything. Now, towards 6G, there is more flexibility and some margin to perhaps define something new. But we start from what is already there. For example, to go back to the discussion about with whom, I mean, from satellite point of view, we want and need to make business with MNOs, because these are the stakeholders that offer services. So they have a huge experience, and this has to be considered. But also the private networks, because a lot of verticals and use cases for verticals necessitate private networks, either private networks or private slices through MNOs. It's not a problem. But the thing is that really we need to sit down all together before we do anything. So this model we were discussing at least until last year, co-creation and collaboration in a more continuous development and implementation mode. One lesson for the NTN or the satellite sector is not wait to have something fully defined product to TRL level 8 or 10 before you launch. You need to go to earlier versions, and therefore, in at least from ESA side, we push for in-orbit experimentation very fast. Almost, we already launching precursors, if you like, towards 6G, because we need to be ready in order to have each computing, for example, or we already talk about GNOBIS on the sky and mega constellations and how you load balances between birds and so on. So these need to be accelerated in the NTN world.
That's really interesting. I mean, it suggests that 6G might start in space, and actually the terrestrial mobile integrates with the non-terrestrial rather than the other way around. But
if I may, we need to be, in Europe, we need to be, to consider the risk that somebody else develops faster NTN 6G. And we certainly, European Space Agency, and I think SNSDU also, we are collaborating with them. We don't want this, so we need to be innovative, and we need to push our industry and to support our industry to be. So just to experimentation, so testing is huge importance to accelerate things and,
Thank you. So I want to move on a little bit. So one of the key elements that people have suggested that 6G should deliver is, I think the phrase is ubiquitous connectivity. And some of that is remote areas, maritime via non-terrestrial. I will bore people for hours about the importance of indoor wireless and connectivity. You know, Europe has got 25 billion square meters of floor space inside buildings. We don't even have a statistic of how much has 5G coverage. Whenever you see a number on 5G coverage or mobile coverage, it's outdoors. What do we need to do? Is it around the standards? Is it around spectrum? Is it around policy instruments to encourage, you know, both the rural connectivity, in-building, maritime, all the rest of it? Where do we start with that? And how do we prioritize it, or should we prioritize it?
I think it's really challenging because it's about users moving between networks and this, you know, the concept of the network of networks and seamlessly moving between networks. And we haven't cracked that. And I think we largely haven't cracked it from a commercial point of view. Technically, it's obviously possible, although there are, I guess there are some points of frictions in terms of devices and you know, spectrum bands that devices may or may not be compatible with. So there's maybe a bit around the technical and spectrum side, but I think the commercial side is really hard because providers of networks want to keep people on their networks. And it may be that regulators and policymakers have a role to play in that. It's quite challenging to see what that looks like at this point.
I mean, there's a mention downstairs from the Latvian transport minister saying apparently there's some sort of rule here for in-building, I think it was access by mobile operators, can get access to buildings more easily. I know that China has a dedicated spectrum ban for indoor usage. I think it's Ireland, you've given... You know, as part of one of the spectrum licenses, there's a mandate to provide coverage in hospitals and bus stations and a few other places. You know, so are there some policy and regulatory tools we can do to improve that? The rural and remote as well.
Well, we experimented a little bit with it because there are also different models. For example, we tried in Ireland to have a company that could be a neutral host that had spectrum and that had equipment for indoor usage and that operators could easily plug into their network. I think they were 10 years too early and they've gone bust. But yes, so what we see up at the moment is operators being quite interested in using satellite to fill in rural parts of the network, because it means that they don't have to build very expensive base stations. They are trying to deal with indoor building by using a lot of macro cells still. But as data needs go higher and if speed requirements go higher, you need to use different spectrum bands, higher spectrum, and that won't, you can't use that on macro cells and then you need to go indoor. I don't think that anybody has really cracked that. We see, from a regulatory point of view, as a regulator, we see private networks only now starting to become a little bit more of interest to people. And what we also see is exactly what you mentioned, is that a lot of the traditional operators, their processes are a little bit too clunky to actually grab that opportunity. And sometimes the requirements of those private networks are too specific. You have I saw a business case of the Port of Amsterdam wanting to have a 5G slice, and it had to have an uptime of you know, X number of nines. And then, yeah, we only need it for 10 cranes in the port area. And you can see that then an operator then almost immediately switches off because it's a very difficult use case and they sell 10 SIMs and that's not going to work. So that you drive those sorts of use cases towards a private network almost. And at the moment, the market is finding its feet in that field.
Thank you. Have you got any thought on the connectivity, universal connectivity side?
Yes, I mean, you mentioned ubiquitous connectivity, and I think when you see that in this requirement wheel from ITU, I think you also need to see it from the perspective of ITU, because it's a UN agency. Ubiquitous connectivity also means there that you can connect everybody. And I think that is also a goal that UN wants to transport, that we want to connect everybody, even in developing countries. And I think that should be also a goal of a global communication system. So an ITU sees it from that perspective. And let me go back, because this is also the value why we have this alignment of requirements and standardization activities via ITU and global organization with 3GPP. Because now you can travel almost around the globe, you can use your one cell phone that you have in your pocket, you can even download in that country maybe an eSIM to get access to a cheap way to do your connectivity even without roaming. So there are a lot of layers where I would say that this activity that we have an aligned view on the G's, an aligned view on the standardization, helps actually that you, with your one device, you have connectivity everywhere. And I think this is something which, when we look into the standardization of any next generation or even the enhancements of 5G still ongoing, we need to keep that in mind, that not to put that in danger, that we break up this even global consensus how to do standardization for global communication system.
Yeah, Robert. I hear you and I completely agree with you, but that is at the moment one of the biggest problems that we face, because who does the certification of certain devices in which country? That's kind of starting to be undermined at the moment with the whole 5G slicing and security setup, etc. So if you go to any roaming conference at the moment, you have a lot of talk about the difficulties that these technologies bring, because they weren't really designed from the ground up with roaming in mind almost.
And that presumably gets even more difficult if you say, well, actually the solution in places like this is use the Wi-Fi. Or use satellite, and you suddenly, well, actually, am I roaming onto a satellite? Is it properly interconnected? If it's Wi-Fi, is it federated, separate login? You know, all that's going to make this network of networks idea sounds great in principle, but how's it going to work? I'm going to sort of start thinking, asking the audience to think about questions. I can carry on, and I'm sure the panelists are happy to ask each other questions as well. Is there anyone on the floor who would like... Oh, there's a question over there on the far side.
Vitas Svetkauskas, Transto Company in Lithuania. Baltic country people, Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, are living in the corridor between East and West. So from the history we know very well that in all times when the enemy is coming, they are destroying the castles. I think that in the present times, the enemies are coming and destroying the infrastructure of the mobile networks. So connection to the satellite communication is starting to be the problem number one in the present time. The question is, who will force the local operators to have these connections to the satellite communication? Because, as I understand, it is not a cheap thing, and the amount of the customers as the population of the all boundary countries is less than 10 million is a big money. So the question, how you understand, the customer or the standards? Thank you.
Right, well, right. I think, Maria, that's probably, how do you encourage the relationships between the operators and the non-terrestrial providers? You obviously don't want dependency, but maybe you want it there as an option. Do you start with the big countries first, or do you also deal with the smaller countries?
Well, we do with all countries. So European Space Agency is has 17 full member states and associate members, and Canada is also associate member, and relationships with all countries over the globe, depending on the initiative. So, first of all, yes, we are in discussions with MNOs, and we are also part of the GSMA. And obviously, the first step for MNOs is this extension of coverage, because the economics work in favor of using satellite instead of deploying GNOBs everywhere. So this is one. The question was more on protection of critical infrastructure, which is also a use case related to PPDR or also to institutional usage. And it is known that this sector also is not only using satellites for years, but they are more and more interested to use a technology that is closer to a cheaper and user equipment and terminals that are closer to consumer, right? So that's why they are opening up to using 3GPP technology. And there is in Europe the IRIS² initiative under discussion, because, okay, this is what I can say. I cannot discuss about technicalities, but this is also to cover at European level institutional cases and also support for critical infrastructure and so on.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Maybe let me add one thing. Yeah. Is really from a technology point of view, you are looking also for the satellite networks in a technology that you already have in your pocket. So this is happening with direct to cell, and so exactly what you're mentioning, you're going closer to the technology that is already there. In some parts, you're using this technology without any modification even. That's the one thing. But then you need to put an effort also and a look into the regulation of this. So we see first regulations for these supplementary coverage by FCC. They have this since spring. They have a ruling for this, for the supplementary coverage. And this is also an agenda item for the next World Radio Conference. How to have also, so to say, a regulation framework for these kind of connectivity between terrestrial and satellite networks.
Thank you.
Well, a quick answer to that is, first of all, there is the what is called FR1, so the frequencies, low frequencies below 3 gigahertz, which are, some of them are MSS allocated frequencies for satellites, and there are satellite operators that they intend to develop NTN solutions for that. So FCC, of course, issued this supplementary directive, or I don't know. However, the European landscape is different from US. So we have a lot of MNOs here at national level. It's, we don't have large pockets of white spaces like what happens in the continent of America. So the transposition of some regulations of FCC in Europe are to be discussed, analyzed, and understand if this can really apply and how. So and of course, ESA is not a regulatory body, and we have to refer to regulatory bodies.
But if we are on this topic, there's another elephant in the room. What satellites are we talking about? Because as we can see, some private companies and their owners are going slightly mad. And so can we trust all the possible partners on this question?
I don't understand exactly the mad.
I think, let's put it this way. A while back, I went to a satellite conference, and there was someone from OneWeb turned up. I'm not sure, but it looked to me as if the branding and PR people said, look, here's two messages to get across. One, you've got 600 satellites, and two, you're not Elon Musk.
Thank you.
So the interesting point is, do we need sovereign satellite capabilities? You know, do we use multiple different satellite networks? What's the is it sovereignty? Is it diversity? What's the approach?
do you want me?
Yeah,
okay, I could start.
We've only got a minute left anyway, so.
Yeah, okay, so of course there is some mega constellations that are already developed from US, but also China is also advancing very quickly. And in Europe, we have to discuss and understand and drive what we want on technology autonomy, and also sovereignty. And this has been also somehow discussed in the previous panel. And also what Europe needs to develop and how. Of course, if I could say my personal opinion, the globe does not need a huge number of mega constellations, but I think there is space for a European initiatives there to start with.
Excellent, thank you. We've got 40 seconds. Any last comments from anyone? Keep it very, very brief.
One thing I think what the gentleman triggered was the idea that not just satellites are part in the solution to have more resilient networks. I think the 6G system as a whole should focus very much on resilience. What the full-scale invasion of Ukraine has taught us is that we have to really build that in from the ground up in our systems. The only reason why many Ukrainians are actually able to communicate is because of illegal base stations that the Russians don't know about. So we need to really think through the system from the ground up.
It sounds like the flexibility, being opportunistic, dynamic. I don't want to end the session on the word agile and agility, but there's a optionality. Optionality is a good one. Excellent. All right. Well, thank you all very much, and please show your appreciation for the panel here. Thank you so much.